Hi, this is Darlene Hansen, and I'm a speech and language pathologist with an organization called WAPITA in Santa Fe Springs, California. We're near the Los Angeles area. And I'm going to talk today about augmenting communication and then using that to expand communication. Sorry about that. I wanted to start the conversation with the idea that, or just debunking the myth that a lot of us have or have heard, that if you use augmented communication, which people call AAC, if you use that, then the person won't develop speech. And I just wanted to start it off saying that that is a myth. There's actually research to support that it is a myth. People who use augmented communication don't choose to use that over the development of speech. Now, again, you have to pick and choose how much time you're spending on developing a system, but knowing that the use of augmented communication is actually going to enhance communication on the whole, which could and sometimes does include the development of speech. And we'll talk about that at the end. So when we look at communication and we look at the use of augmented communication, we have to think about, well, what's the purpose of augmented communication? All of us, all of our kids, human beings and other creatures, I guess, too, but we all develop communication first. So we develop the idea of gaining someone's attention as an infant. We develop turn-taking just through vocalizations or hand movements, some nonverbal acts, but you're developing that idea that I communicate with you. Then when we get speech, we develop the expression of feelings and how to make requests, later to work on problem solving and storytelling and things like that. But that comes from the development of communication, not from the development of speech. So even if your person don't have use of speech, and I don't want to say that use of speech isn't a good thing. That's not what I'm saying. But even if your person doesn't have use of speech, they can and should be developing use of their communication skills and the ability to understand how communication functions in their whole life. When you don't have that piece addressed, then that's when we oftentimes get behavioral disorders or behavioral issues and behavior plans in a person's life. So the development of communication isn't separate or isn't a part of necessarily the development of speech. So you can think of them kind of separately. Now, some of us communicate through speech, but we do communicate through other means. So when speech is difficult for the person to do, and a lot of times with autism especially, we're seeing the diagnosis or the descriptions of apraxia, which is when you try and say something and you're thinking one thing and then you say something else or you don't say anything. So there's a motor impairment in this area of speech. Apraxia actually can affect a lot of different things in your person's body, but I'm talking about speech. So if you have speech apraxia, then the idea that we aren't developing communication until we get speech is problematic because the person can be developing speech, developing communication, and we're not addressing it because we're looking at just the speech. I hope I'm making sense there. So speech is really, really difficult for a lot of people who are considered nonverbal to develop, but it doesn't mean they can't communicate. So if we use augmented communication, we can focus on that communication development, while at the same time, when the person's ready or when the person's neurological system is ready, start focusing more on the development of speech. But it's not an all-or-nothing experience. A lot of times what we're seeing as well is that as we develop augmented communication, the person does start to develop speech. And again, I'm going to talk about that at the end a little bit. So AAC, augmented communication, is a way to develop communication skills that don't require the use of speech, and this is going to be a good thing for a lot of people. When we talk about AAC, or augmented communication, there's a lot of different means of of devices and systems. I put some pictures on here. I didn't know how sophisticated I could get with video and stuff. I apologize. But you could have low-tech, which would be things that like a PEX system, a picture exchange communication system. That's something that we use ourselves, we develop ourselves. You might need to have BoardMaker on your computer to use that, and that's made by the people at, or distributed by Mayor Johnson through Dynavox. I'm sorry, real quick, I see Rebecca saying that she's stuck on the second slide and she can't hear anything. I don't know how to help you with that, Rebecca. Anyways, low-tech communication systems would be like PEX. Sometimes people use object communication systems where you might take materials or items in your environment and use them for vocabulary. For example, you might have the French fry bag or box from McDonald's or In-N-Out Burger, and that means I want French fries. Those are low-tech things. The other thing that would be low-tech would be up on the left-hand top corner. You see a boy with a hand on a system that he's wearing on his hip, and that's called a hip talker. And those are low-tech. They don't typically cost a lot of money. They don't typically have a lot of versatility to them, but they're functional. These are kinds of things that you can find on the Internet. If you look at different augmented communication catalogs, like abilitations or enabling devices, if you just Google augmented communication devices, you'll see a whole bunch of things. And they can range anywhere from, $100 to $700. And those are considered low-tech. Now, a high-tech device would be something like in the bottom right corner. There's a little tiny picture there, but Dynavox V system. And the Dynavox Vs, or there's other companies as well. Words Plus is another company that makes high-tech equipment. Prinky Romic is another company that makes high-tech equipment. These are going to cost thousands of dollars, and they are dedicated communication devices. So they do a lot more for the act of communication. They store more vocabulary. You can navigate through dynamic displays. You can store whole stories in there. Oftentimes, you can go and make it into a computer. It'll be a computer as well. Those are high-tech systems. On the left bottom, there's something that says Say It Sam. It's a small handheld thing. That's considered high-tech as well. So usually low-tech versus high-tech kind of goes with how much does it cost. However, nowadays we have Apple products like the iPad that I show here on the top right, or even you could use your iPhone or your iPod, or some of the Droid apps are coming out as well. So that's starting to merge this. So things are starting to change. But in general, the more sophisticated the system, the more sophisticated the user needs to be. And again, that used to be considered high-tech. Apple is kind of debunking that because the iPods and the iPads don't cost as much as the other systems do. But the iPads and the iPods don't come with assistance to help you to run them either. So that's part of the cost, I think. You have a lot of choices out there when it comes to communication. I did have a question, on here about the different costs of the different devices. I think I kind of answered that. That was from Todd in Todd in Taylor, Michigan, I guess. So I kind of went over a little bit about the different prices. He's also saying that he offers a free app or software to use on your PC, and I can give you his website. It's www.autismideas.com. So you can check him out. He has something, I guess, to offer us there. So so I'm going to go on real quick because we're going to talk about how you pick what you want. But these are the high-tech and low-tech. I'm going to switch to the next slide, which would be choosing what you need. Again, there are so many things out there. There are so many. It changes daily. So to think that you're going to have one perfect device is going to be a problem. There's not one perfect device that meets everybody's needs. So I've listed here a few of the things that you might want to consider. First of all, you need to consider the symbol system that the person understands. So is it words? It's spoken words. Is it line drawings? Is it photos? Is it written words? Is it letters? So when you're meeting with your AT person, your assistive technology person, or your speech and language person, you know, they're going to be talking in regards to what symbol system your child or person understands. Different devices have different symbol systems they can use. And, for example, if you have a person that can do generated written language, you need to have a letter board on there that you can generate language with. If you might also want to have line drawings because that would be easier communication, but you'd want to have both. So you got to look for a system that has both. So you first need to know the symbol system. You also need to know how is this person going to access the device. When you're talking about a person with cerebral palsy, you would be looking at, do they need to use a head switch or some kind of a toggle switch? But when you're talking about a person with autism, we're usually talking about access with your hand. But you also need to think about, some people can point, but maybe, like I have some people have been trying the iPad with, but the way they point, their knuckles drag on the touch screen. So they need to have something with a key guard, okay? So that goes into how's that person accessing the display? Some things are touch screens, some things have raised buttons, some things have key guards. So that's accessing the display. Then you look at what is the display? How big can it be? You know, portability is a big deal. We'll talk about that in a second, but a larger display isn't so portable. The display, is it going to be in two boxes? So there's two choices, or four choices, or 32 choices, or can it grow? Does it only have 32 choices, and I can't change it up? So once he gets done with those 32 choices, and he's going to have a new device then. So you want to look for what can you do with the display, and can you grow in the display? You also got to think about the communicative environment. So is this something for home? Is this something for school? Who the partners are. In Los Angeles, a lot of people don't speak English in their homes as a family. So if that's the case, then if the child's learning English, for example, at school, can the people at home understand him? Or is he going to have a machine that's going to allow him to be bilingual? Or is he going to have a different system at home? That might be the case. So you're going to look at who are the different kinds of partners that he has and how do each of them communicate with the person. Input versus output. So if I type it in, can I see what I've typed back? Or is it just I hit the button and it, you know, the picture's gone in the sense that, like some people use the letter boards on paper. Well, you hit the letter, but once you've hit it, it's gone. There's no permanence to it. So you want to think about that. And then finally, the portability. I talked about that a little bit, but the hard part for people who walk around is that a lot of this equipment is heavy. The handheld devices, of course, don't fall into that category, but some of the smaller communication devices that could be carried around really aren't portable for communication. They're good for classrooms, but not communication out in the community. So you got to think about that. The battery life, how long is the battery going to last? Is it going to last the day? And then also user friendliness in regards to, can you work the thing? If you can't work it, you're not going to be able to help your person that's using it. If you don't understand it, you're not going to tend to bring it out and use it. So these are some situations. I've got a few questions here, so let me see if I can read them really quick and get to them. Let's see, Jill in Billings is saying that her son is 10 and nonverbal. He's used text, sign typing, gestures, all that kind of stuff. I feel like we need to pick one way that is the most universal, but his issues with motor planning inhibits writing and sign. That's very common because that writing and sign language take good fine motor skills. Typing with voice is somewhat cost prohibitive, and text require anticipation of what we need. Yes, meaning that if you use a text system, it's a pretty static system, so you can't really say something that somebody else didn't think that you needed to say in the first place, because there won't be a picture in there. I feel like we've tried everything, can't find the right fit. Yeah, that's the hard part. So if your story fits similar to Jill's, there is a word processor called the Fusion, and it's F-U-S-I-O-N. It's made by Writer Learning, like write it down, Writer Learning, writerlearning.com. There is one with an internal speaker, and so if you can do the letters, it's a nice device. It's $479, so it's not terribly expensive compared to other devices, and that's been really useful. It's a word processor, so you can say what you typed, and you can print it out and all that kind of thing. Again, the iPad and the iPod or the iPhone, anyways, the apps from iTunes, basically, have been pretty much a single system that's changed the world of augmented communication. Because if you have an iPhone, you can just download apps on there for communication. Some of them only cost $2. You don't have to go with the ProLoquo2Go, which I do like, but you don't have to go with that if you can't afford it or if you don't need it, because it's around $200. Again, that's relatively inexpensive. You can put in an app form, you can put a yes-no board on your device, on your iPod or your iPhone. So those are some ideas. Is it durable? So Sarah in New Jersey is talking about are these systems durable? And that's a big thing to consider. I should have put that on the choosing the need slide. A lot of our guys have some impulsive emotional moments where they might slam or pound on a piece of equipment or throw it. If that's the case, you're probably not going to want to go with one of the less expensive devices because it's going to break, unless it's okay if you have the funds to keep replacing it. But that's when you might want to go with some equipment from the fancier companies like I mentioned, like Dynavox or Prinkeromic or Woods Plus, because they're going to be a little more durable. Well, a lot more durable, really. So that's something that you need to consider. Most of those high-end pieces of equipment have they can be pounded on. They can be dropped. If you drop it repeatedly, of course, that's going to affect the software and the hardware inside. And then you'll have to have servicing done, but they do withstand a lot more than some of the other things that we're talking about, the less expensive things that we're talking about. There is one called the Tough Talker. I think that's made by Words Plus, but I'm not positive. That, again, not so portable because it's pretty heavy, but it is durable. So you can look at those things. It's a good thing to consider when you're looking at different pieces of equipment. Becca in Louisiana is asking, at which point does a parent look at for AAC? Has a five-year-old who's learning to speak more than three words? Should we keep trying the integrated system? And again, I think at the beginning of the conversation when I was talking about the fact that for all of us, communication comes in first before speech. So So if your person doesn't have a means to communicate, then it's not too early to start with augmented communication. Now, if you only have so much time in the day to work on these different things, then, of course, you're going to want to allocate things responsibly that way. But the idea that you have augmented communication while working on developing your speech is a good idea. I'm looking to see if I have any other questions here that apply to what we're talking about right now. One second. Oh, one person was asking, this is Elizabeth in Concord, and she was asking about the bulky kind of devices and what's new and out there. Her son's computer savvy, she's saying. She wants to get something like the Proloquo to go, or the, and that's an app, for those of you who don't know, that you can download from iTunes to put on your iPod or your iPhone or now your iPad. And she's talking about funds to do that with. One second, let me check here real quick. Yeah, let's go back. Sorry. For funding, your school systems can provide, and I mean they're legally supposed to provide augmented communication devices for people to meet their educational needs. So if, in fact, you have it written in your IEP that this person has educational needs that require him to have access to a communication device, then you can go through the route of the school system. Otherwise, your insurance is, if you have insurance, if you don't have insurance privately, and if you do qualify for it in California, it's Medi-Cal. In other states, I think it would be Medicaid. Then I'm sure Medicaid can, but I know Medi-Cal can provide with a communication device. If you have a report saying that the person has a medical need for a communication device. So you can do that. They do not, insurance companies do not cover all pieces of equipment. The vendors, the people who sell the equipment, need to be vendored with the insurance, the Medi-Cal company, for example, or the insurance company. So if the device you want isn't vendored with your insurance, then they can't purchase it. Now, the company could get that vendorization started with that insurance company. That is possible, but it takes more time. In any of those cases, the Apple products are not being covered by insurances. Because they're universal. They're for everybody to use. So, for example, a lot of insurance companies will actually, if you buy a device that has a communication device plus a computer in it, then they'll make you turn off the computer part because they don't fund computers. So it's kind of falling under the same thing at this time. Some different things that we've done in our community. Again, I'm in the Los Angeles area, and I know that we have different lifestyle and resources sometimes, but, you know, just to start talking to friends and family about how your son or daughter could use an iPad or an iPod, and sometimes people will get donations, but sometimes people have these, like an iPod Touch, in their closet, or they know somebody who has it in their closet because they used to want that or used to have that. And then they got an iPhone, and now... Hi, it's Darlene again. I apologize if I was dropped. I think I was on my end. Okay, so let me go back to... I don't know how that happened. Anyways, age to start using AAC, I would say, you know, again, you're going to use low-tech devices at first and systems, but you start right away. You start as soon as your person shows that he's not got a means of communication. Okay, so we think of augmented communication as a device or a system, but you have to expand that thinking to making sure that the school experience is augmented. So you're augmenting your school experience. You want to make sure that your child is able to show that he learned something. So how is he accessing the curriculum? Now, the curriculum could be general education, or it could be his IEP goals, but
how does he access that curriculum? So in a nutshell, if you know that your child only understands photographs and he can only do a symbol, a display of four, then if they're teaching a lesson about numbers or quantities or butterflies or the moon, you want to know that your child has a display of four photographs so that he can be asked a question about what was just taught and give a response. So it's not just that you're augmenting the center or the IEP goal objective of making requests of popcorn or something like that. He knows this symbol system. He knows what photographs are. And he knows how to show me that he knows things when I give him four choices or two choices or eight choices, whatever the case may be. And so whenever you want to know if he learned something, you need to have a display that allows him to show that. You can also use materials. A lot of the classroom teachers have materials or flashcards or whatever. Ernest, somebody is saying sounds had disappeared, and I don't know if that was when I dropped or what. So I'm not sure if we want to check that out. But you can use the materials from the classroom. So if everybody's making up vocabulary cards, then in the class, then the vocabulary cards are his as well. They might be in written words. They might be in picture vocabularies. They might be in photographs. But she too has those materials that they can use. The whole thing is that you want to augment the school experience so that your person can show that he's learned what everybody else had been taught just as well as him. I'm kind of overgeneralizing, but only because it usually is true. Learning information is a lot easier for our guys who are nonverbal than actually telling us that they learned it. So if we can figure out and consistently use a way to tell us that they know something, then we're going to be in better shape. Okay, sorry. Other things that augment communication besides our devices and our systems are just the person's nonverbal communication acts. So, and a lot of people with autism don't have a whole lot of nonverbal communication acts. So you don't get a lot of facial expressions. You don't get a lot of gesturing or a lot of pointing. But if you don't have that, that does decrease your ability to be communicative. So you might want to have goals about focusing on developing some nonverbal communication skills. So the act of pointing, the act of eye gaze to the item that you're talking about, the act of staying within the proximity of who you're talking to or what you're talking about. These are things that are difficult for a lot of people with autism, but yet serve a communicative function for the rest of us. And so when that doesn't happen from your guy, then it's harder for the rest of us to understand what he's talking about or what he's trying to get across. So don't forget to think about nonverbal communication acts. The other thing is the environment. You're going to prepare the environment for communication. Some people have words labeled all over the place. Some people have pictures or line drawings on certain drawers in the house or cupboards in the house where things are kept. And so you can do that as well. You can prepare the environment that way. So if you, for example, had a picture, a line drawing of toilet on the bathroom door and a picture line drawing of food or drink on the refrigerator, and then a picture line drawing of books on the bookshelf, then you could have a board in your house of those three vocabulary words just sitting on the coffee table. You can start using and teaching, hey, point to the toilet picture if you have to go to the bathroom. Point to the book picture if you want the books. point to the drink picture if you want to drink. While we're sitting in on the couch, you can tell me these things. You know, you're starting to teach this by having the environment prepared. You also want to have the person have access to the systems. So a lot of the families, when things are going well, have multiple display boards. You don't just have one. So if your picture board has six pictures on it, you don't just have one picture board with six pictures. You have five copies of them. And mom might have one in her purse. There's one on the coffee table. There's one in the classroom. There's one if you're working on him initiating, he might be wearing one, that kind of thing. But you want to have access to the system, and you want to make sure your person has access to the system. I like to tell staff at school and school systems and the families as well, but why don't you carry the device, or not the device, not the machinery, but carry the system. So you carry a yes-no card with you. You carry a letter board with you. You carry a picture board with you for the playground. So that when you go to talk to this person, you're ready. You're presenting it. Now, he's not initiating, but he is getting to show that he can communicate, and he is getting to control his environment with communication. And that's an important piece of this picture. Initiation is something you have to work on, but at least you didn't walk away going, wow, I didn't have the board with me, so he couldn't say anything. The last thing on this slide that I have is training the communication partners, and this is really important. It's very important when you have a high-tech device, because if you don't know how to work it, or the staff doesn't know how to work it, then you're probably not going to use it. And then your person's probably not going to use it. So hang on one second. I'm hoping this is working out right. You have to have trained communication partners. Sometimes this can mean trained in how does the high-tech device work. Sometimes it can mean what kind of questions can I ask this individual. And so it's more of a casual thing. But when someone's developing communication, we have to all be on the same page, and we have to know what that page looks like. Training your communication partners, if you have a high-tech device, should be written into the IEP. So if someone says to you they're going to buy a Dynavox V, you want to make sure that your district or your provider persons have a plan to support that team to be trained on how the machine works, how to program it, and how to use it. A simple device like a word processor, that doesn't take a lot of training. But the high-tech, high-end devices, those do take training. Who's going to be in charge of the programming? How often is it going to be reprogrammed? It takes time to reprogram things that have to be programmed. If you use a letterboard, you don't have to have things programmed. But if you're using a device with pre-programmed vocabulary, who's going to be in charge of changing that up? Okay, that all needs to be figured out as the team goes on. Okay, let's see. I have a question here from Robin, which I'm happy that Robin from Illinois wrote in, because I was wondering if I had completely died. So thank you, Robin. But Robin's asking for more information on the iPhone and the iPad apps. If you go to, I think the last slide I'll have it written down, but if you go to, I do have it written down on the last slide, the WAPTA, which is where I work, website, I have a blog, and it's called Let's Communicate. And on that blog, I keep a list of apps that I like that I find for communication. Now, you don't go buy them all, but go ahead and search them, because I really do just put them up there. If I find them, I put them up there if I think they work with our guys. So go ahead and check there, because there's a lot of apps out there. The ones for communication that I like, Proloquo2Go is a fancy system. It can be simplified, but again, you have to program it to do that, which is fine. But that one is $200, so that's the most expensive. iConverse is a system that has like two different ways of accessing it. It's an app with two different ways. One is there's six buttons. I need a drink. I'm hungry. I need to take a rest or a break, something like that. I need to use the restroom. I feel sick. There's six different pre-programmed things. But you can switch over to your own photo library, in which case you take and you put photos from your photo library that you've stored on your iPhone or iPod, and you can download it to that app, and then you can type in something that you want it to say. So you might have a picture of your son in a car, and it might say, let's go for a drive, that kind of thing. That's a good one. There's another one that I like a lot that's called Answer Yes, No. And if you put that app on your phone or your iPad or your iPod, you you have an automatic yes-no board. And the, and that's, I think, $1.99 or 99 cents. So very inexpensive. Then there are, let's see, what else? Oh, there's for typing, for those who type, there's an app called Speakit. And, again, that you type on it. You can save some phrases on there, and you can do it, what do they call it, vertically and horizontally. Now, Speakit is also available on the Droid apps as well. I don't know if it has all the features on the Droid one, but it is available. I don't know about the other ones yet. I'm just starting to learn about the Droid apps. Those are the ones I use for communication, but a lot of the educational ones are very good for just showing that you know something, which, again, I think is really important. So there's math apps, there's vocabulary words, and that. There's a couple more, actually, I'm just thinking right now, there's a couple more under communication, like there's one called Locabulary. It's like vocabulary, but it's Locabulary. And it has some good stuff about it. It's not as expanded as it can be and probably will be, but you could look at that one. Somebody, Sarah in New Jersey, is asking about the Tango. And the Tango is a really nice piece of equipment. It is now vendored with the insurance company, so you can get that through your insurance now, which is a good thing. And it's a device that you can buy through Dynavox, and it has, I think, five buttons on it. But it allows you, within just by picking through those five things, you can navigate through all different kinds of displays. It's a very nice piece of equipment. It's very durable, but you have to take the time to learn how to use it. So again, it's a company that supports Dynavox. Is a company that supports you. So if you purchase their equipment, use them. You know, don't. If you're in a school system, for example, don't figure that the speech and language person at the school necessarily is going to be your contact. It's the person at Dynavox is going to be your contact. They're not going to program it for you, but they're going to troubleshoot with you and help you through things. A lot of times for equipment, we end up buying things and they end up on the shelf in the closet. If you're buying high-end or your district's buying for you high-end equipment, use the companies they want you to. So don't feel bad. It's not like you're not used to doing that. I mean, we're not. We don't go buy a car and then think that we can call the car dealership up every month to find out how something new works on it. But for augmentative communication, they expect you to do that. That's why it's costing so much money. So do it, because otherwise it's going to sit in your closet, and that's not a good thing. Okay, so what about speech? Speech is a very, very fine motor activity. When you look at how speech develops and when it develops in our neurological system, it compares to handwriting. So it's there's a lot of movement that happens that's coordinated. So your breath control has to be coordinated. A lot of our guys hold their breath. Whether they're going to talk, they're holding their breath, or they're talking on the inhale or vocalizing on the inhale. You have to organize your vocal cords on and off. You have to organize your articulators in very discrete ways. So it's really, really complex. But what we're seeing is that the hands and the mouth, they work together. I mean, that we already knew. We're wired to have our hands and our mouths work together. So as we develop use of communication with our hands, whether it be through any means, sign language or pointing to pictures or pointing to a device or spelling things out, you start to, your mouth, if it can, starts to become part of that. It gets like a residual benefit. So that's a good thing. The other thing is that our guys, a lot of the times, and you're going to see in your reports from your teachers and your school districts, a strength is the visual mode. Well, print is a visual mode of communication. So if I can memorize that this circle with some lines drawn on it is called ball, B-A-L-L, then that's a whole unit. I know that B-A-L-L is ball. Just like I know the picture line drawing is ball, I can know that B-A-L-L is ball. Now, I might not know how to create that for you with letters, or I might not realize that I could use that with you as a mode of communication, but once you teach that part, if you can, if your person can learn it, then you have visual communication. If your person can learn to start articulating, start pairing their sound making with that visual mode that is oftentimes their primary mode of communication, you start to create that link. I think it, I communicate, I think ball, I spell out ball, I touch the picture of ball. If I can do a B sound, I pair that with it. So your neurological system in autism is so linear that we have to kind of create those pathways, those understandings for the system. But if you use the visual mode as their first way of communicating and then start talking about it in sense of, oh, okay, now you can do a B, you can do a B. You're pointing to the picture of ball, now pair B. And start creating that I think and I communicate, whether it be with written or I think and I communicate with speech. You start teaching that, okay? And that's, I'm not doing it justice here, but that's basically how it's working. But we're seeing people, because of this pattern, we're seeing people start talking when they start, for me, I do a lot of typing to communicate for my clients, and so as they start typing, they start saying things, and then we start pairing that for them. And that's been very, very cool to see. So that's been a neat thing. I've got a question here from Joanne in San Diego. She says that her high-functioning daughter in college has extreme anxiety. How do I assist her in addressing her teacher, proctored test time rules, and her right to test with others? I think I have ideas on that. I don't, it probably doesn't apply to, I don't know if it applies to this conversation or not, Joanne, I'm sorry, but... In a college system, you don't have an IEP, but your Department of Special Education Services or whatever they call it on your campus can provide accommodations for you. And so you would need to meet with them to discuss what accommodations your child would need, your daughter in this case, such as proctored time test rules and versus her right to be tested with others. I don't know what you mean by that exactly. A lot of times, if you're going to have somebody talking to you while you're taking a test to stay on task or to go on to the next item or whatever, that's not going to be conducive to taking a test in the same room as the other people, because then you're disrupting their test taking. So you would need to probably go to another space to do that with. Like, again, the goal is to take the test, so I don't know that you would need to take the test with the other people in the same room. But then you're talking about her anxiety. I think that for that she's going to need some support in addressing the teacher. And I don't know that it's going to come through augmentative communication, but just some coaching, maybe some social stories about how to address the teacher, and practicing with that kind of a thing might be a helpful situation on that. Let's see. I've got Fahim Shafa from Bangladesh, who is saying that, I'm sorry, I don't know, Fahim, if you're a male or female, but I think it's your brother is 17. He has autism and his low communication skills, but he said some word like this, like food or go outside, open the door, but he can't make a question. He can't answer questions. He repeats the same that's been said. Okay, so when people are repeating the same thing over and over, repeating what you said, so we call it echolalia, whether it be delayed or immediate echolalia. But a lot to me, what I see when people are doing that kind of repeating back, so if you said, do you want spaghetti or a sandwich, they'll say sandwich. If you said, do you want a sandwich or spaghetti, they'll say spaghetti. When they do that automatic repeat back, it, usually to me it's a sign that he didn't process what you said. He is just on automatic. So I like to help people slow down. And then I would use augmentative communication sometimes to say, okay, spaghetti or a sandwich? Look at your choices. Now what do you want? Now he can say it back if he can. If he can verbally say it, that's great. But again, the visual and the auditory might help him out here. So maybe he points to spaghetti then while he's saying spaghetti. But there, you usually you'll want to see a delay, because if you get that too fast, that automatic communication, it's not processed most of the time. And so that's why it's just repeating you back. You need to slow everything down, typically, so that he can process what was said, organize himself, and then say it back. In movement, that's called ideation. It's idea, plan, execute. We all use it. We all do it. When you first you come up with an idea, then your body neurologically makes a plan, and then you do it. If you're just saying it back, you're just executing. So he needs to have time, probably, I'm guessing, to process that first, which would be to get the idea first. Okay. Let's see. Going to the next slide. I'll take any more questions that you have, anyone, but I wanted to say thank you. I do have on here our WAPADA website, which is WAPADH.org, and that's where I keep the list, the blog, and that going as well on the Let's Communicate blog. And then there's other resources, WAPADA as an adult agency as well. My email, which I'm sorry I did not list here, but I'll tell it to you real quick, is D as in Darlene, G as in George, Hanson, H-A-N-S-O-N, at me, M-E, .com. And you can email me if you have anything else you'd like to ask. I do have a website under my name, DarleneHanson.com. But I keep most of my information now on the WAPADA website. So if you have any questions there, you can ask me through that. I think I might have gotten to everything. Just looking really quick here. Sorry about that. Someone asked if somebody would be too old. There's a lot of questions about how young can you start augmentative communication, and I think I said that you can start as soon as you can. But then also there's a question about is 36 too old? And that was from Paula in Kentucky. No. Early intervention is a very good thing, of course. I'm not saying it's not. But the concept of a window of opportunity with our guys with autism, I'm just not seeing it. People are learning things or showing that they know things later in life. And I don't know that it's all because we've wasted time. I think it's because now they're ready sometimes. So if your person can use the alphabet, then let's start teaching them how to use the how to use that for communication if he doesn't have another means of communication. The alphabet is the only way that your person's going, besides speech, that your person's going to be able to create language. Excuse me, sign language will work as well. But if you have to use an augmented communication system, you want the person to have literacy, because otherwise he has to wait till somebody thought that he might want to say that and then gave him a picture for it. But if he has literacy and he can use 26 letters and he has the idea of communication and he knows that if I know how to spell it, I could tell somebody, then they can do that. They can have more open-ended communication. They can have real conversations then. So you definitely want that to go. Oh, sorry, here I got another couple more questions. Dorothy from Pearland is asking, can augmented communication help with articulation problems? Absolutely. One, because now you can understand what he said. He can then shape his language, you know what, to help him say better. So if he was trying to say popcorn and it was pop, 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 and you couldn't get that, if he pointed to popcorn on the picture board, you can then help him say the word popcorn. Otherwise, you might help him say puppy because you wouldn't know, okay, that kind of thing. So definitely. In Allentown, what do you do for a child who is scripting their play and typical routines? No, not interactions with other children, functional communication. Okay, so for that person, again, those are scripts. That's automatic, and I really do spend a lot of time talking about automatic communication versus voluntary communication. Voluntary communication is processed. Automatic communication is internally driven. It's just something I thought of, okay? Which is good for initiation, but if you're just stuck on a script, it's not good. So I tend to not engage in the automatic stuff, the scripts, if I'm trying to actually get something from somebody. So if I'm talking about a cooking lesson and the person's saying, let's count the blocks, 1, 2, 3, 4, I don't start talking about the blocks. I keep on, hang on, we're talking about this cooking activity. Now, what are we going to make? I just make that stop, make that script stop as best I can. And sometimes it's just by not talking about it. And it'll keep going on, overlay, kind of. But you don't want to address the script if you're actually talking about something. Now, a lot of people will say, I like to interact with those scripts when I'm socializing with you. So that's okay. But if you had something to ask the person, you can't go with that script. You've got to stay on your agenda, okay? Now, Luis in San Diego, how do you curtail perseveration with words to follow continuation? Yeah, so same kind of thing. If the person's saying the same thing over and over again, then it's not valid. It's not, it's their communication, but if you've asked a different question and it's not the answer to the question, don't follow it. I just used to say, hang on, it's my turn first. Here's my question. Get back to what I was talking about. Then we'll go back to what they're doing, okay? Kind of hard to explain over a computer, but that's kind of it in a nutshell there. And I think that is it. So I will check one more time, and I will end the session. Thank you all for listening. I hope that you gained a little more information with today's presentation. Thank you.